Thanks for joining us. Today I'm speaking with Peter Coleman, who is the CEO and Managing Director of Woodside Petroleum. Peter, great to talk to you.
Thank you.
The last year, it's visited so much upon you and the organisation, so much to contend with in operational terms. You know, you had some weather to contend with, advancing major growth projects. There was also, you know, concern about Asian growth to an extent towards the end of the year. How do you lay out all of these things in terms of their influence?
It's a really good question. It was a challenging year for us on a number of fronts, but equally on the other side, it was very interesting and satisfying. You know, the base business performed well. As you mentioned, we had some weather events and some major turnarounds in our business that we needed to work through. We did that very well. Importantly, we got some new projects on stream as well. We got them in on cost and schedule, so very, very pleasing. So that part of it worked well for us. A couple of disappointments along the way, but overall worked very well. Very importantly, best ever year for personal safety in our business. Very pleasing with that. Did a lot of work on the balance sheet last year, getting costs out of the business again, getting prepared for growth, working with the banks, getting our bonds in place and so forth. So we've ended the year with about $4 billion US in the bank, about $6.5 billion US of liquidity. So it's really set us up well now for our growth projects. Our new growth projects are going well. Scarborough, some excellent news during the year. 52% increase in the resource size. That's been tremendous for us. We've advanced that well. Some commercial negotiations are behind us now. And now we're just in the final rundown to a final investment decision, hopefully by the middle of this year. And of course, Browse, continuing the discussions on Browse to get the right commercial structure in place to move Browse forward. At the same time, moving forward with the environmental approvals and the engineering. And of course, I mustn't kind of leave out Senegal. So we got our Senegal project at Sangomar to a final investment decision at the end of the year. That's an oil project. It'll stream in 2023. So we've got a big project out the door and off and running. We're very close on Scarborough this year. And of course, Browse will come through next year.
Now, you had to write down the value of Kitimat as well. What does that mean in the broader picture when it comes to offshore growth levers, so to speak?
Yeah, look, disappointingly, we wrote down the majority of the upstream portion of Kitimat, so the what we call the Liard Basin, an absolutely excellent resource. In fact, when you look at what we've been able to do since we bought into it, we've increased the recovery on a per well basis some fourfold, so 400%. But unfortunately, the market in Western Canada is just flooded with gas at the moment. So we had to take a very critical look at it and say, realistically, when's this resource coming to market? And that led to the write down. Yep. Now, that same outcome in the upstream has a flow through effect, though, because it now creates more value in the downstream part of the asset. So the actual LNG plant site at Bish Cove and the pipeline is actually now worth more because we've had that kind of pass-through of the cost. So it was disappointing in that regard. I think most investors have looked through that. They can see that was a long-dated asset for us. It really has very little impact in the short to medium term. It is still a long-term growth prospect, and we've got that in the inventory. But very importantly, we've got these other growth projects that are going to be tremendous for Woodside.
Indeed, and when you speak of them, you've got like a number of important milestones that are coming up as far as 2020 is concerned. What are the things that investors should look out for most carefully?
Yeah, well, there should be a couple of things. Firstly, on Scarborough, importantly, we'll complete commercial negotiations with BHP on their tolling for getting through our Pluto facility. That'll happen by the end of first quarter. At around the same time, we'll be issuing notices to proceed for the onshore contractors to move forward. That's important for us. And then by the middle of the year, we hopefully will go to a final sanction of the offshore part of that project. So there'll be a number of things over the next 4 months that investors can look forward to.
I suppose it's important not to get too far ahead of oneself, but at the same time, you've got to be shopping for customers as well. How are those conversations going? And what's the state of play where China in particular is concerned, given some of the headwinds that they face at the moment?
That's a good question. On the sales side, on what we call the marketing of our gas, it's well progressed. About one third of the gas out of Scarborough is already contracted in what we call binding contracts. So the price is there and the contract is a firm contract. About another third have priced agreements, but they're not binding yet. And so we're working hard with those buyers to turn them into a fully binding agreement. So by the time we go to FID, we'll have almost two-thirds of the gas sold, and that's more than adequate to go to a final investment decision. Now, of course, recently we've entered the year and the coronavirus has come over the top. That's really not affecting those long-term sales. People can see through that. They know those deliveries are a few years away. But it is affecting the short-term market. So we're seeing short-term pricing at pretty much the lowest levels we've seen in more than 10 years. And that's simply because everything was set up to go into China. Of course, China has had to stop taking gas at this point. That gas has got to find a home, and it's finding it at the lowest cost in the, or price in the market.
Is that a situation that you can see panning out over the medium term, that gas not being able to find a home in China? Because you would think that activity would slow, but would it slow to that extent?
No, we actually think once China is open for business again, in fact, demand will pick up quite rapidly and may even exceed what it was beforehand as the backlog in manufacturing tries to catch up. So, we are hopeful the coronavirus will kind of burn off as we get out of the winter months in the Northern Hemisphere and get into the summer months. It normally will do that, or at least it will become dormant. Let's hope there's a vaccine that's developed in that period of time. Let's hope we don't see a reoccurrence in the next northern winter. But at the moment, we can see a line of sight to, the virus laying down, things getting back to normal, and then manufacturing, in our view, will pick up very rapidly.
Now, you are famous for looking over the horizon in terms of the important strategic picture that natural gas plays as a bridge to the future in Asia. Are you seeing any other emerging catalysts in that picture at the moment as far as Asian economies are concerned?
Well, it's a really good question around, as we look at dealing with climate change, and of course, a lot of the discussion has been around, well, let's all be carbon neutral by 2050, and we share that aspiration. In fact, Woodside set that as a target for ourselves. Having said that, we need to step back from it and say it's actually not about reaching a particular point at a point in time. We have what we call a carbon bank of credits at the moment that take us on a pathway to a 2-degree warming of the atmosphere. That carbon bank, we're drawing from that at a greater rate than we should be at the moment to kind of reach that 2 degrees trajectory. So we fundamentally must change the energy mix, and we can't wait for 2050. We've got to start doing it now. Our view, it's a strongly held view, is that gas is the only major energy source that can assist in that transition. And we'd point to the facts. The facts are that if you look at countries like the United Kingdom, who moved away from coal in the mid-1990s and moved to gas, today, have the lowest carbon footprint that they've had since the beginning of the 20th century. And it's on the back of moving gas into their energy mix, some 35% in their energy mix now. The IEA, the International Energy Institute, put out a report this past 2 weeks that said in 2019, greenhouse gas emissions globally flattened for the first time, and put it squarely on the fact that gas was a major contributor to that as power generation was switching from coal to gas. So the facts are there. It's not just about us talking about our own product. The facts are there that as nations switch from other sources of energy across to natural gas as a fuel, you're getting that credit. Now, we need that credit because as we build towards that net zero future, we want to make sure we don't make too many withdrawals from that carbon bank that we have and inadvertently heat up the atmosphere too much along the way.
So given the fact that Asian and emerging Asian economies are quite carbon intensive, the projected demand growth for natural gas is around, I think it's between 2-3% out to the early 30s. Is there a potential upside risk to that sort of number?
Well, there potentially is, and I wouldn't call it a risk. I'd say that's a real positive, particularly as a seller of gas. But yes, there is, because those economies have been building coal-fired power stations, and they did it for economic reasons. Coal at that time was the lowest cost into the marketplace. But increasingly, major economies like Europe are saying, if the world can't get their head around a carbon price, we will put one on it. And of course, the president of the European Commission just here 2 weeks ago made a statement to that effect and said, we as Europe are now debating putting a tariff on goods that come into Europe that come from high carbon sources. And so whilst the economics might be driving some of those Asian nations to have gone to coal, the reality is the cost of their product going into the marketplace in the not too distant future could get slapped with tariffs, and economies like Europe are already having that debate.
Peter, it's always good talking to you. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
And thanks for joining us for the Executive Series.